We now finally have a number two receiver opposite of Terry McLaurin, and we can stop talking about it. I'm just kidding. Of course we're going to still talk about it, because this is continuing to be the conversation about this offense. Is now, what does Stephon Diggs look like, and what does Terry McLaurin look like getting 10 targets? And it's amazing how the narrative has changed ever since the news broke, and it's gone from the Commanders need help at wide receiver to, oh, now they got a lot. Look at how deep this is, and there's going to be guys that don't make this roster. Luckily, we have a former NFL receiver that's going to jump on with us now, Anthony Armstrong, Commanders squad, Believe in Commanders. We don't talk about that show. It's with Scott Jackson, though. We talk about Commanders squad, mm-hmm. Anthony, because that's the show you and I do together, my friend. Also, public speaker and trainer, and loves comfort tortillas, which is a complete inside joke. I don't know if I've listed everything. Realtor, you do literally everything, my friend, but I will focus on Stephon Diggs in this offense. I'll streamline it with you, because we spent a lot of time talking about Brandon Ayuk, and thank God that's going to not be a thing anymore, although it was fun for a while. Stephon Diggs, Terry McLaurin, Antonio Williams, you kind of expect that to be sort of the depth chart, but again, we talk about number two and number three, and there's situations and there's matchups and all these different things. Just big picture first, Stephon Diggs in this offense, what do you like? What type of, I guess, extra layers can he add to this offense? Also, given the fact that we don't know a ton yet about what David Blough is obviously going to put on that field, Anthony.
You know, good to hear from you, Nick, outside of Locked On, you know, in that space. But I think with Stephon Diggs, you know, after the first couple of days of training camp, team really realized we need to get somebody that we can rely on outside of 17. Not saying the guys aren't doing work and putting in good plays. It was just it was kind of hit or miss. You didn't know if you were going to get some separation or not, and I think it solidified some things for this team and for your quarterback. Now, I will say I felt that you could have went into the season with the receiving core as is. It was just going to put more pressure on JD to be accurate and go through his reads. It was going to put pressure on the offensive coordinator to make sure he was diversifying play calls and finding, you know, matchups. But ultimately, when you get a guy like Stephon Diggs, 1,000-yard receiver, 80-some-odd catches, he's worked with young quarterbacks a multitude of times, a couple times in his career. He's going to be a good fit in my eyes. I think he's at a point in his career where he's mature enough and really wants to leave a positive impression on locker rooms. And I'm excited for it, because it should open up the offense a little bit more and make defenses really decide who they want to catch the pass on the upcoming drive.
And you know, if you look at this depth chart now, I mean, you've got Terry McLaurin, Stephon Diggs. You know that Luke McCaffrey and Jalen Lane are important just because of special teams alone. There, Antonio Williams, obviously. Start going down, it's going to be tougher and tougher for some guys to make the roster. A Treylon Burks, a De'Ami Brown, a Van Jefferson, though I think, you know, De'Ami Brown probably makes it. But then, like, when you look at some of the back part of that depth chart, Anthony, are we at a point now where a guy that maybe deserves to make the roster might just get cut simply because it's a numbers game in another position?
Well, you know, one thing I have to point out first is that in one of the press conferences, DQ and AP were saying they look at the roster more like the full 70 rather than just the 53. They're considering practice squad positions. And I think that you could see a guy, you know, a player that's right on that cusp, like you're saying, end up being in the practice squad spot. And they may be willing to do that, you know, because they understand they're still with the system, they're still with the team, and they could very easily be activated from one week to the next. So I think they're looking at it more than just who's going to be on the active roster. I don't think they're going to keep more than seven. That's probably the tops that they're going to go with. Six could be kind of tight, but you also have to look at other spots like running back and tight end and see where that comes from. But, you know, the middle-of-the-pack receivers, this is where you separate yourself, Nick. You have to go out there and can you make a play on special teams, right? Can Jalen Lane take a punt to the house? If he can do something like that, if a Luke McCaffrey can take a good kick to the house or have some strong returns, that's the way they can get their name written in Sharpie rather than being on the outside looking in.
When you look at that running back room, I mean, obviously you got Bill, you got Rashad White. Those are two pass-catching backs alone right there. I mean, you go farther down, Jerome Ford, kind of similar in that sense. Jeremy McNichols, we know that's he can be a blocker, a pass catcher. He's kind of a utility guy for them. Catron Allen, he's that short yardage, just big body that's going to knock guys on their ass type of running back. I mean, there's a lot there when you talk about sort of the numbers and spreading it around and looking at receivers. And I mean, you got weapons out of this backfield too, Anthony, that I feel like can make this offense incredibly dynamic, with Chigakonkwo added at the tight end position. And I don't know, maybe more from Ben Sinnott this year. And I just feel like now they have the ability to sling this thing around. And if Jaden stays healthy, I mean, you got guys out of the backfield, tight end, wide receiver. Anthony, it's an offense that feels a lot more potent now than it did a couple of days ago.
100%. You really can't, you know, lock one room down and think that you've got the team figured out. You know, teams are going to go and find a way to roll coverage to Terry McLaurin, and that's what you should do out of respect of who he is in this league. But then now you have to decide, like we said earlier, damn, now I got Stephon Diggs one-on-one. That's not a favorable matchup. I got Chigakonkwo one-on-one against, you know, maybe my third linebacker or my third corner. That's not a favorable matchup. So defenses are going to have to really pick and choose. Now, when you're having two dynamic receivers out wide, that opens it up, makes it softer boxes to run the ball. So a good, healthy cadence by the play caller of mixing run to pass and when to, you know, put those things in there. They're going to really help this thing roll. Like, this is a chance to keep a defense on their heels, right? They don't want to go downhill and just try to hit you in the nose, but now you can run some outside zone. You can throw the ball into the flat to Rashad or Bill and let them use the yak abilities. You can use flexes and motions and formations to get people open as well. So it's a lot to be excited for. Now we just have to wait for the games against Miami to see what it really looks like in competition.
What is the addition of Stephon Diggs do for somebody like Antonio Williams in terms of his role, good and bad, right? And again, I know some of this is speculation because we don't really know, but you know, you've obviously added another target the defenses are going to pay attention to in Stephon Diggs. It maybe moves Antonio Williams down a little bit in terms of potential targets, but I also feel like, to me, Anthony, there's a level of, like, he can be a little more sneaky because there's going to be defenses having to stay more honest with Stephon Diggs and Terry McLaurin specifically out there at receiver.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you think about just a matchup with Philly, right? Week one, you got Cooper DeJean, you got Quinyon Mitchell, two pretty good corners in this league. I don't know who their third corner is, no disrespect, but Antonio Williams is going to get that matchup. It's generally not going to be, you know, a top corner that you're going to up against in those game plans, in those situations. So being able to free him up against, you know, his route running skills, you've seen what he can do. He's very sudden. He's quick. He's a pro, and he's already been a sponge with Terry McLaurin. Now he gets to have even more pass catches in the NFL by Stephon Diggs that he gets to learn from. So I just see him growing his game faster than before. And he's just going to be able to benefit from favorable matchups, right? He'll end up getting matched up with a linebacker in some zone, and Jaden's going to recognize it, and that should be an easy game plan, easy pitch and catch for them. And honestly, it should open him up on the field, and it's going to open his mind up in how to grow and play this receiver position.
Talking to Anthony Armstrong, when you look at maybe, I won't even use the word concern with you. I'll use questions that maybe need to be answered in terms of other positions right now on this team. For me, center is number one, and it's just, we need to see what Nick Allegretti, one, healthy, two, what he looks like all of those things. The things that we've talked about are still there. Then probably corner after that, Trey Amos and Mikey Samuels still have a level of talent, but there's questions about durability, consistency, things along those lines. If you were now to sort of look at the positions or the areas of the biggest concern or question for this Commanders team, now that receiver, I guess, in theory, is taken off of that list, where would you go?
Center, you know, but the thing is you're not really going to bring anybody else in, I don't think. You know, it's just kind of waiting until Nick is healthy and ready to go. But you take advantage of the reps that you get, right? You got Julian Good-Jones, you got Brandon Coleman taking reps over there, you got Matt Golden taking reps. At least they're getting their reps in now. You know, from last season, daggum, everybody was getting hurt. and it was like, they almost called me up to go play and run around a little bit.
You can still run. I've seen those videos. You still got it.
Yeah. You know, I'm hanging the cleats back up since they got Stephon now, so don't call me, AP. No. But it's center. It just adds a little concern. But, you know, honestly, Nick Allegretti has played in this league long enough. I don't think that you're going to see an offensive scheme that puts, you know, your rookie fifth rounder one-on-one against Quinnen Williams or Jalen Carter. I think that's bad coaching. I don't think that you're going to see that from this system. So they'll use some scheme that doesn't leave their center on an island. And that's the beautiful thing, at least about the offensive line, that there's five of them. Right? Laramie's going to take care of the side. You know, you can get a guard. Like, hey, it's great to have a Sam Cosmi next to you. You know, so you can get some help from your guard to help out a young center. So that's the first one. I think corner, adding Rasul Douglas, that was necessary. He brings some size, physicality, and I think you just chalk him up as the CB1. And then, honestly, I think it helps you be a little bit more flexible with the other guys, right, between Amos whenever he comes back and what Mikey's going to do and Amik's going to do. But those two guys there, they seem to push each other to a high level. They're going to be pretty interchangeable, and they're going to be pretty dynamic for this defense.
You know, speaking of this defense, Anthony, I know it's really early, and a lot of these are just videos that are out on social media because we can't see everything at camp. But, man, these Sonny Styles is – we're already getting Ray Lewis comparisons to him, dude.
Man, that dude there, he's big. I remember one of my first practices, we got a guy that got traded from the Ravens. His name was Edgar Jones. He's about the same size as Sonny Styles, 6'5", 250. And I had to block him one time, and he was like looking up a redwood tree because he just got taller and taller and taller. And he wasn't Sonny Styles fast, but just that stature just does something for your defense. And the way he's flying around, he's seeing things, reacting quickly. I can't wait for him to go and hit some people in aqua and orange. That's going to be fun to see. But the cool thing is that between him and Jaden, like, this training camp has been relatively quiet. Like, they've been able to just go out there and play football, haven't been berated with a whole bunch of other questions, and I love that for them.
Hey, you know what's nice? I mean, really, when you think about it, it's really, like you mentioned, it's been all about football for the Commanders. And, you know, the Cowboys and the Giants and the Eagles all have various levels. I wouldn't even use the word drama, but, like, they got stuff that's beyond football. It's nice that this team isn't talking about, you know, a Terry McLaurin contract or anything. It's just strictly about football for the Commanders.
100%. And I think that's the way they want it. You know, coming out of last year, you know, you want to get back to what you do and what you do best. So any additional distractions does not add to value to the team, and I definitely think that's why, you know, certain people aren't in town. You want to be a Commander, you're going to act like one, and everybody that's in the building right now is definitely checking that box.
All right, what do you think? Is this defense going to make us less angry this year?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. You know, and there may be some bumps early because with a lot of communication, there are chances that something slips through the cracks, but I think there's more chances to have splash plays and interceptions and turnovers than they have mistakes. And I just love the way that the coaches coach the defense and the offense. DQ mentioned for them to know the player knows it, the player has to teach it back. And so that means you're really mastering that that defense. It gives you a lot of flexibility. And I can't wait for week one against Philly to see them unleash and pull some feathers off some Eagles.
I am, one, I love that. I'm going to steal that line from you. Two, I'm disappointed that the comeback is dead now that Stephon Diggs is in burgundy and gold, but that's okay. We still have you, and that's what matters.
Hey, man, look, I've been nursing a calf. I think it's like from driving too much, man, schlepping these kids from one place to the next. So I had stem and ice on that day. I was like, Lord have mercy, if I made it to camp, I'd be hurt the same day, man. So I'll enjoy it from here and covering the team with you.
Life comes at you fast. Anthony Armstrong, great to talk to you, buddy.
Yes, sir. You have a good one.
There he goes. The original 1-3. I'll tell you what. I mean, listen, he's still fast, I'll tell you what. He's right, though, right? You get to that point where all of a sudden you're like, why does my calf hurt? It's not from any physical activity. It's from something stupid, like you stepped wrong or you're been stuck in traffic too long, and all of a sudden your left knee hurts. I don't know. It's the world we live in. But Stephon Diggs hopefully stays healthy this year because the Commanders need all of the weapons that they can throw out there for Jaden Daniels in year three. I'm Nick Ashew. Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. That's who's given us all of our Commanders training camp coverage, which we all still sit here and try to figure out whether or not Stephon Diggs is going to wear 18. It's a temporary number since it's already being used on the roster. Maybe it's going to be something else. I'm kind of one of those numbers guys a little bit, right? Like, you got to have a good number. More receivers are going for the not going for the 80s number anymore. So he's been campaigning, Stephon Diggs has, or at least he did it once on Instagram, trying to get number 7, trying to get the GOAT, as he said, Joe Theismann, to bless him with the number 7. I think we got to go a different way, man. I really do. I mean,
that's a tough number to take in this town.
I think that is a tough number to take in this town. Dwayne Haskins did have it for his short time with the team, the late Dwayne Haskins. But, you know, that's a tough sell, man. It's a tough sell on this team. And I know he's from the area and he understands the value of that medal, Chris, but I don't know, man. I think there's a lot of other numbers he could go with and not take number 7. It's not like he's worn 7 his entire career anyway. I feel like if he wore 7 his entire career, it's maybe a conversation, but in this case, I think it's probably just you got to go a different direction.
I don't get the whole number thing with some of these guys either. I just don't care. They pay someone millions of dollars to have their number or something. Like that means so little to me. I don't know.
Well, did you see the story about Davante Adams when he went to the Jets? So he wanted to wear 17. There was I can't even remember who the guy played like 4 snaps, a receiver that had played like 4 snaps.
Yeah, yeah.
Wearing 17. Davante Adams shows up with literally a duffel bag of $100,000 in cash. Tells the guy, hey, here's $100,000 in cash. It's tax free. Give me the number 17. And, of course, that dude came back and said he wanted $1 million for the number. So Davante Adams went to ownership and said, I want 17. And then they gave him 17. And then that dude had to switch, and he lost out on $100,000. So be careful. Be careful how high you want to go with these numbers. Sometimes it's just like, hey, give me a case of beer. Get me a pizza.
Well,
okay.
Jaden gave Tressway a bunch of stuff. So
yes, he did. He did give him a bunch of stuff.
It matters so little to me. I know to some players it obviously does, but I just that's
your identity though. Come on, your number is such a part of your identity.
I mean, I guess it matters as much to me as if you're what color jersey you're playing this week. I don't really care.
Oh, so you just don't care about any of that stuff then?
Yeah, it's just kind of that's not the game to me. And like, I guess when you know you retire and they decide to retire your number, I guess that's like a cool thing. But I don't know, man. To me, it doesn't matter that much.
I think the number 18 is an ugly jersey number.
18?
I hate it. I hate it, and I hope he gets something cool. I don't know what it'll be, but I hope he gets something cool. I know it's not like it is a temporary number. We know that's the case because yeah. Tyler Owens already has 18, so maybe that's going to be enough. Well, but
and they don't have them like where it used to be, you know, all the receivers were in the 70s or 80s. And yeah. Like, they don't do that anymore, which I kind of don't love either, but whatever.
Now you've got, you know, it's so much. Well, you had receivers with numbers in the teens. It just wasn't as common before. And then it was like, you know, Keyshawn Johnson made it a big deal with 19.
Well, and you had linemen were in the 60s. And, like, you know, there's certain positions you just kind of know what they were when you see their number.
Now you can get the single digits as a receiver, same thing as a corner. It's the college rules. And when they switched it over, I hated it, but I've kind of gotten used to it now. I mean, linemen, it's still similar, 60s and 70s, and you know, tight ends have a little more freedom, and depends on the position. But I always liked it when you had more strict number rules for positions. It just makes it kind of easier to identify positions and everything. But
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly. Especially when there's, again, a rule I don't love, but like, you know, offensive lineman too far downfield or like things like that.
Yeah,
you know, it's like just as a fan, just casually being like, "Oh yeah, that guy's wearing 66. He shouldn't be there." Or
right,
whatever,
right.
You know, like.
Well, they've kept that the same. Offensive linemen still have to keep the same 60s and 70s. I think.
I thought it was all players could just pick kind of whatever.
No. They limited still by positions to a point. Like receivers can do numbers in the single digits, the teens, or the 80s. Offensive linemen 60s and 70s. Defensive linemen 70s and 90s, I think. There's some other mixes in there too, but that's generally what you get with all those. Yeah, I remember Tom Brady was so upset about it too. Well, linebackers can wear numbers in the 40s. I feel like you could get a number in the 40s before they changed it though at linebacker.
You wasn't running a lot, like 42.
Yes. So you have like
that's
they've
the one
changed
I would
some
say,
of it.
I mean, I guess was he more of a safety, I guess, but I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was more safety. So, I mean, he'd line up at sometimes go up at linebacker. You know, it is, he play out of position, but like it's the position you're listed at, basically. Yeah, I personally am a bit of a numbers nerd, like jersey number nerd, but only to certain points. Like, I don't care what an offensive lineman wears, but a linebacker, give me a number in the 50s. Sonny Styles picking 52? Hell yeah. Leo Chanel winning 54? Yes. Adafe Owe 98? I'm in. Good number. Good strong number. Javon Kinlaw, 99. That's a strong number right there.
That's the Wayne Gretzky. It's so associated with Wayne Gretzky to me.
I will say 18's still ugly to me, and it'll always be that way. It's just always going to be. But, yeah, I just don't think – listen, everybody's really happy Stephon Diggs is here. This is one of those – it just made sense from the beginning. You got to figure out what the rest of the depth chart's going to look like.
One person's not happy.
Who would that be?
Someone we haven't been talking about.
Oh,
lately.
You mean Brandon Ayuk, who still has not posted.
Yeah, I don't think he has, but I don't think he's happy.
I'm waiting. Like, I have never cared more about a Brandon Ayuk post than ever since Stephon Diggs signed with the Commanders. Like, that's all I've cared about because it's been such a thing. Like, Brandon Ayuk gave us so much content this summer. So much. And now we can actually get to football again. But let's
like,
be honest.
Is he going to, like, put his tail between his legs?
What does he do?
Still be this, you know, very flamboyant, like, oh, everyone's the problem but me. Or like,
that's my thing. Is like, does he make this into something where it's everybody else's fault but his? Or does he go turn the attention back on the 49ers for not releasing him? Does he blame Jaden Daniels' mom for something again? Blame Jaden Daniels, Adam Peters, the football gods, I don't know, the Players Association. I don't know. Who is he going to blame? His realtor? I have no idea. That's why I'm so fascinated by it, because nothing has been off limits, it seems like, at this point for him, that you have to be curious. The conversation just has to be like, what is he going to say? And, yeah, and it was funny
like,
for a while.
This is when he gets quiet.
Right.
When he shuts up.
I know. And he had a chance. Look, I'm telling you, the narrative was starting to flip. He was at least starting to sway people to a spot where you could say maybe he was a little bit of a victim out there. Whether that's true or not, it didn't matter. The perception was, you know, now we're hearing from Brandon Ayuk. I'm not a big fan of all the posts, but he hasn't done anything egregious. I don't like his delivery necessarily. It feels a little, you know, maybe he should be a little more professional about, like, whatever. People could have their problems with that, but for a while, that's all that it was. And then Jaden Daniels smiled at that fan that said, F Brandon Ayuk at SoFi during the World Cup, and all hell broke loose. And, Brandon Ayuk basically shot himself in the foot, and that was it.
How mad are you even at someone like Jaden, who's probably just kind of like ignoring this guy and just going like,
right,
oh, like, hey, whatever, cool, you know, like.
Well, I think that's the thing too, is Jaden Daniels just smiled it off. Like, he just kind of smiled and laughed it off, and it wasn't even meant to be. I think he was just trying to, like,
have you ever worked a retail job and some customer comes in and they're asking about something, whatever, and then they make like an inappropriate joke or comment and you're just kind of like,
yes.
Yeah, it's like,
yes,
that kind of laugh, you
yes
know. It's like, it's not that, oh, that's a knee slapper, and just like,
right,
it's like kind of like, oh, I'm going to awkwardly laugh and walk away just because, yeah. Like,
that's it.
And I feel like he just got so offended by that.
He
and
did.
It's like, dude,
that,
like, what?
That ruined it for him, you know? Like, that really
that basically
did.
It ruined his career's reaction to that.
Yeah. I mean, at this point now, I don't know. I mean, if the 49ers were to release him, maybe a team brings him in as an injury replacement, maybe. But I just feel like even that, it's like he hasn't played football in forever anyway. And he was kind of a pain in the ass before the injury. And he was always in Kyle Shanahan's doghouse. And it's just continued. Like, I don't know. We made the people. Guys do get like 1 second chance. So I feel like at some point a team for like a veteran minimum might bring him in. But like, that's where camp makes sense. You could get in and get an opportunity to work into an offense and do all those things. Like, he missed out on all of it because emotion got in the way.
I don't think it's even just emotion. It's just like, clearly, he doesn't have people around him that he trusts.
Oh, yeah.
That
he
can, like, talk to about, like, just, hey, like, he's, like, posting on Instagram, like, do I have a warrant out in this state? Like, just, you got to have people around you, at least. It's somewhere in your life you can be like, yo, we need to figure this out. And what do I need to do? What steps do I need to do? Instead of just posting on the internet and what is he just doing for likes? Like, I don't even understand.
Right.
What was the benefit he got from into this?
There was really, for a while it was just trying to annoy the 49ers so they'd release him. But then it just went too far. And you realize, oh, okay, so you're just not thinking this through at all, are you?
Congratulations, you played yourself.
You played yourself. Speaking of contracts, Anthony Davis is contract extension eligible, but is he going to sign an extension with the Wizards? Josh Robbins will tell us next. Nick Ashew on the Fan. So Anthony Davis is officially extension eligible, and now that we know who the Wizards took number one overall, and now we know what they were going to pay Trae Young, this is going to be the biggest question surrounding this team. Luckily, Josh Robbins of The Athletic jumps on with us to kind of help us out with that a little bit, which it's also very simple, as you've put here, Josh. The Wizards are going to wait until the season to have extension talks with Anthony Davis, which is just a calming headline for somebody like me that has been praying for that to be the approach. Is this now a situation, Josh, where it's really based on they truly do want to see if he's worth giving extension to, or is it more of a, we want this to sound like we want to give him an extension, and then it becomes, he actually looks good, let's try and trade him as the season goes on?
I think it's fair to say that trading him at the during the season is a possibility, a real possibility, particularly if after they discuss an extension, they are far apart. If they wouldn't be able to come into an agreement, then the Wizards would have to consider trading him, because you can't risk losing him for no one in return. And he has a player option for the year after this upcoming one. And so while it might seem unlikely that he could turn down his 27-28 player option, in that case, you'd still have to consider a trade. But I do believe that they will swap figures, extension figures, because Anthony Davis remains a top-tier two-way player. But would they come to an agreement? Or would they be very far apart? I think that remains to be seen.
I think Anthony Davis is just, it's always so complicated with him because, like you mentioned, I mean, this is one of the great bigs we've had in the NBA. When he's healthy, it's just, it's always been about his health. And there were trade rumors with the Warriors this offseason, and, you know, the reports where they weren't interested eventually because of the same thing the Wizards have to weigh in, whether or not the health and the age and the contract is going to be a thing. What is a range that you think? And I know this is a hypothetical, so I don't know how specific we could get here. But, I mean, obviously the actual extension would be 4 years, $275. And obviously Rich Paul has said he wants that. Like, he wants the full thing. Well, the Wizards probably aren't going to give him that. Is there a number or a contract framework that you could see where both sides would actually say, you know what, let's actually sign and let's keep this thing going in Washington?
Depends on how high the Wizards are willing to go, and it depends on how low AD and Rich Paul are willing to go. You're right. 4 years, $275 million in a scenario that would start in 27-28 and end in 30-31 when he's 38 years old in the middle of that season. That's the top, the most money that they could agree to. That's the uppermost tier. That's the max. Is it realistic? I find it difficult to believe that it's realistic in an age where the second apron exists. I mean, just look at Joel Embiid's contract, or look at what Paul George is being paid. These are very onerous figures in an age of a second apron. But that's not what you asked me. You asked me what's a possible analog for this. Well, Kevin Durant is now 37 years old. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I believe he's got an average annual salary of $45 million. Now, he's had some injury issues over the years, including that Achilles tear back when he was with the Warriors. Maybe that's an analog that could be referenced when these two sides really try to negotiate come the regular season.
You know, there was a lot, Josh, about whether or not Anthony Davis even wanted to play for the Wizards. And, like, I kind of understand it, right? Because, you know, he's gotten traded a couple of times. He's at that point in his career where he just wants to compete for championships. And the Wizards are a young, up-and-coming team that has playoff expectations, but not championship expectations. Do you know or have you heard anything more about his desire to truly be a part of this team? Beyond, obviously, the extension talk, if we were putting the money aside, just from a basketball perspective, do you know sort of where he stands or have any instances to what he's thinking at this point?
I have a two-pronged answer to that. First of all, he has said that his impressions of the Wizards now that he once that he had been here for the remainder of the season were far better than what he saw from the outside. It's no surprise to you that the Wizards organization from the outside, from people who have not been a part of it recently, they're generally not good. That's something that the Wizards are trying to change, and they are making progress there. That's the first part of my answer. The second part of my answer is, although AD hasn't been doing interviews over the last 2 months, I did see an Instagram reel where someone, I think an independent content creator, did pull him aside somehow, somewhere, in which he asked AD, well, how many games do you think the Wizards are going to win? And AD's answer, I believe, was approximately 40 games.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is a clue that he continues to doubt whether a team that had the worst record last year, admittedly a team that was not trying to go full speed at trying to win games, that's putting it mildly, can go to a team that makes the playoffs outright without the play-in. I think he's still skeptical of that. Certainly that Instagram reel that I saw would certainly indicate that he continues to be skeptical.
Yeah, and listen, jumping from 17 to 40 wins is still a big jump, but that's different for like where he is in his career versus where the Wizards are as they're building this thing up. You know, we've obviously, Josh, we've seen teams make big jumps, and we've watched the Spurs and the Thunder and, you know, the Pistons did it, the Cavs even years ago. Big jumps from one year to another in terms of wins. What are you hearing from people around the league in terms of sort of like the around what the expectations are for this Wizards team? Is it play-in? Is it around 40 wins? Is it like, hey, they could actually surprise even more and get over 45? Like, what's kind of just the general idea of what the league feels about this Wizards team right now?
The last time I took a real hard look at this, like a real survey, I spoke with scouts, man, that must have been in March or late February after the AD trade, after the Trae Young trade. And at that time, the general consensus was, well, there could be a lot of variance here where maybe they finish as high as sixth and finish as low as maybe 11th. Where the scouts, the executives I spoke to for other teams, believe that they would, when the season ends, would have a chance at reaching the playoffs. I think that's fair to say. And by chance at reaching the playoffs, that's at the minimum a play-in spot. A few people were more bullish than that. So I think it's fair to say somewhere between 6th and 11th, with the more likely scenario probably being around maybe 8th, 9th, considering that the rest of the East, for the most part, should be better than it was last year.
Yeah, the East is really interesting. Talking to Josh Robbins of The Athletic, you know, obviously you've got the Sixers with all the hype around them with LeBron, and Jaylen Brown was just introduced today, and you have the Knicks. But then, you know, after that, I think there's a lot of questions around a lot of these teams where there's this second tier of teams that, it feels like it's a large group there. When you look at the Eastern Conference right now and where it stands, you obviously talk about it being improved here. After sort of that Knicks, Sixers kind of top tier, where are you on some of these other teams? Like, do you expect the Pistons to be another 50-something to 60-win team again? Because I kind of look at that and see at least an avenue where maybe the Wizards can kind of jump a couple of teams that maybe don't live up to some of those expectations that might be set on them in that middle of the East.
I'll try to go very quickly. Detroit went 60-22 during the regular season last year. I don't see them winning 60 games this upcoming year. I just don't. Mm-hmm. We can get into that if you like. Boston, they're not going to win 56 games this upcoming year, but I don't see them dropping down to 45 or worse. The Knicks are going to remain very good, 50 or above. Cleveland, I see as remaining at or around 52 wins. Toronto, 46 wins last year, probably are going to remain there and do better if they do wind up acquiring Kawhi Leonard. Philly's going to be better. Charlotte should be probably at least as effective, even without LaMelo Ball. Miami should be better than 43 wins. Milwaukee, going to be worse.
Mm-hmm.
Bulls, probably going to be worse. Indiana, going to be much better with Halliburton coming back. So, and Atlanta will be better, I think. So that's, I hope, the context that you're looking for, that you know, a lot of the teams that were, a couple of the teams that were down last year are going to be better, and the teams that were up at the top of the standings, they're not going to be as good, but they're not going to bottom out.
No, that's exactly what I was looking for, because I think we really talk about those top two teams, like you mentioned, in the Sixers and Knicks, and how good they're going to be, and especially the expectations. And after that, I think you have a lot of teams that are kind of in the middle of that pack or that tier. You know, and obviously, look, the Wizards have their own level of excitement just around somebody like A.J. Dabonsa. What has impressed you the most about what you've seen from A.J. Dabonsa since he was drafted by the Wizards, whether it's on the court or off?
It's a combination of the two. It's that, as my colleague David Aldridge had said, he wants all the smoke. He wants to, and by that, DA means, and I agree with him, that he wants the expectations. And even more than that, the expectations of going on to be the number one pick and maybe starting as a rookie, which I think he probably will do. It's not only that he welcomes it, that he didn't look the least bit phased by the spotlight cast on him during summer league. And I get that it's summer league. Those are not the real games. But in a perverse way the league is covered nowadays and the way fans watch the games, the summer league performances really have more scrutiny on them than the majority of regular season games. So it's that he was not only willing to accept the smoke, but actually welcomed it. That impressed me.
And I think, Josh, that's what's so important, is that there is a weight on somebody like A.J. Dabonsa getting drafted by the Wizards with a draft that had so much hype, and he's the number one overall pick, and it just feels like he's embraced all of that. And listen, like, yeah, sure, summer league is summer league to a point, but if a guy is the number one overall pick and dominates in summer league, then that's a good sign. It's certainly there. If there was one thing, though, with Dabonsa that you'd look at and say, okay, he's got to work on that as he gets into his rookie season, what would that be?
Two things. Okay. His three-point shooting, mm-hmm. Which I'd like to see him improve over time. It doesn't have to skyrocket right away. And then his dribbling in traffic. You know, having a more compact dribble in traffic, which is not easy to do considering that he's a legit 6'9.5" in shoes. So, but these are things that can be improved. You know, what he does do is attack the rim and draw fouls. And some guys, even after 5+ years in the league, never do that. So he has that already. I think he's got all the capability in the world to become at least an above average 3-point shooter and an above-average wing ball handler. I'd rather have those two areas be the areas he needs to work on rather than being able to attack the basket and being able to draw fouls.
All right, Anthony Davis and the Wizards going to wait until the season starts to have extension talks. Josh Robbins has all of that up now at The Athletic. Really good to talk to you, Josh. I appreciate the time and the insight.
Nick, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, there he goes, Josh Robbins. All right, Nick Ashew. It definitely was good to see that the Anthony Davis Wizards extension talks are going to have to go into the season, which is the right choice, because if you're the Wizards, get him out there on the floor, let him play for a little bit, and then I would say move him. Because you're not going to sign him to a 4-year, $270 million deal. It's just not going to happen. Nobody's going to give him that in the NBA. Three guys after the age of 33, which is what Anthony Davis is now, have signed 4-year extensions. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and Steph Curry. That's it. Now listen, Anthony Davis, in his prime, when he's healthy, one of the best bigs the NBA's ever seen. But the injuries are only going to keep mounting up, and as the age gets up there, it's going to be even harder. That's a tough sell, man. Rich Paul has his work cut out for him, because this is going to be probably the toughest challenge yet to get one more payday for one of his clients. And look, Anthony Davis and the Wizards, it doesn't make sense anyway. From a long-term perspective, why? Like, why would you do that? He's got a different timetable. He wants to be on a team that's playing for a title this year, not a team that's looking to make the playoffs. And like the Wizards are in a great path, but they're on a different timetable than where Anthony Davis is. And then that's the biggest thing. It just, if he's out there and he's healthy through the first 20 games of the season, you manage his minutes and hope a team really wants to trade for him and you go that direction. I got it. You know what? Show your real power, LeBron James. Get the Sixers to trade for your buddy Anthony Davis. That's what I want to see. They need another big. I mean, it's going to be Joel Embiid or Anthony Davis that gets hurt anyway, but hear me out.
They're both injured at the same time.
Though. That's the only issue. I'm like, so what you do is you alternate, so they're never playing them back-to-backs. They don't play consistently. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure something out. Because if the Wizards can move Anthony Davis, that's the real goal. I mean, it should be. If he can play well and you could get a first-round pick, even if it's protected and it's way down the road or whatever, okay. Rather it be that. Alex Saar is going to be coming back from this surgery. The beginning of the season, maybe he doesn't start. Anthony Davis is out there to start, and then Saar gets ready and hopefully continues to grow from, you know, year two to year three, like he did year one to year two, and then he kind of takes over that role because you don't want to hinder the development of a lot of these young guys. You know, it's like this DeMar DeRozan rumor. The Wizards are interested in DeMar DeRozan. I mean, okay, why? At this point now, you're going to start taking away shots, touches, and minutes from younger guys. Trae Young's already going to take enough shots away from them. Then Anthony Davis, for a little while at least. I mean, it just doesn't, the relationship doesn't make any sense with any of them. I mean, I understand why they made the trade in the moment, and you hope you can build them up as an asset maybe. And, you know, it's not like they had to give up much for Trae Young or for Anthony Davis in those trades, but there's just no way. You just paid Trae Young, and at least he's, what, 28? Anthony Davis is 33. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. And really, there's a team, here, a player option after this season for $62 million. He's going to likely pick that up unless you're going to give him long-term security. So you technically probably have him on the hook for another year anyway. And a team would like that. All right, Doc Walker's coming up next. Doc, behave yourself, my friend. Doc's a professional. I'm just kidding. I'm Nick Ashew on The Fan.